All right. Oh.
No, now you just turned yourself off.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
We'll hit that live here. See, that way we can talk now and it doesn't record, but this does.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brandon Rhodes.
And I'm Aaron Flores, filling in for Brock Dittus. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations around the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective, enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
And we are sharing one intro page, and so that's the delay. Anyways, covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internet, etc.
Yeah, and I guess that does it.
right on.
It's you and me, man, in the studio, seeing if we can tie all this stuff together.
Yeah.
It's a pretty fun thing.
We'll turn down the music there.
There we go. Okay. We are... Brock is in Germany. He's actually, I think, in Texas on waiting for his final flight home.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he and Adele have been in Germany for the past week. So,
yeah,
Aaron, it's you and me, man.
Yeah, he's given me instructions here, aptly entitled How to Produce the Sprocket Podcast on our Google Docs. So if any of you want to hack my email... now you can learn how to also through Google Docs.
what a noble aspiration at the end. WikiLeaks, actually. I think Julian Assange has been trying. He can't crack it yet. We are joined here by Martina.
Hi. Fauna.
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 Like Fauna, but with an H.
Oh, that's good. from Clever Cycles.
Yep.
And looking forward to talking about utility and lifestyle bicycling. Beyond spandex and tall bikes.
Yes.
Aaron, how's your week been?
It's been a week. I gotta admit, like, I've honestly been looking forward to / dreading this moment right here all week.
This is it.
this is it for me. This is make it or break it for me. feel like if I don't do this just quite right, I'll never be in with the Sprocket substitute crew.
Brock will never invite you over.
No, no. No more games of Carcassonne at night.
No, no.
But while we drink and you have... Very professional. You sit there, you know, you have your soda in your hand. No beer, he has soda.
That's right.
Well, yeah, we should mention what we're drinking.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I'm having a Bridgeport Kingpin. That's a triple hopped double red ale. I love it. Mm-hmm. 7.5% alcohol by volume.
Mm-hmm. And I have a Ninkasi in my hand, and it's the Total Domination IPA, and it's also wonderful hoppy. And I so have to pace myself because I just survived the Naps preview. So.
Oh. and what are you having, Aaron?
I'm having a Diet Hansen's creamy root beer.
That's classy.
I'm staying sober
really
for
creamy?
The. It's not the creamiest, actually. Not to wax too intellectual on root beer, but one of the creamiest root beers I've ever had was that Shasta brand that you get over at grocery outlet.
Seriously,
for like, you know, quarters to a can, but.
Would you say that's the most important component of root beer for you is the creamy?
No, just character. like if you want like a sharp, spicy root beer, like a sarsaparilla type, go all the way. If you want like a sweet root beer, like a Henry Weinhardt's, you know, that uses honey as a sweetener, you know, get a sweet root beer, like, but don't like go, you know, somewhere in between like A&W. Whoops.
They are not a sponsor, sir.
Okay. Anyway, shall we go to headlines? Shall we?
Yeah, let's
BS some more. Shall we?
Let's do headlines.
All right.
Oh, you have not turned up my.
Nope. Start it again.
There we go.
What can I'm very professional with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Okay, so one of the first things was the Joey Harrington article.
Yes, this is good.
Yeah,
on Bike Portland, huh?
So I didn't. You knew more about the original incident about him being hit on Foster.
Yeah. So the headline this week was former U of O quarterback dude Joey Harrington. He's doing some sort of like bike helmet. Like awareness and advocacy kind
of
thing.
Okay, so yeah, we should talk about the actual article first. So the article is about he's hosting a benefit ride, basically helmets for kids. Actually, it's called the Bridge Breakers Helmets for Kids Century. So you go in, it's on September 30th, you pay a $125 entry fee, and that money goes towards... yeah, well, it's a good cause. Hopefully, the money goes towards getting helmets more available for kids on bikes.
And he, this was sparked by a few months back. He was riding his bike actually out in our neck of the woods here in Lentz, down Foster, which is just a crazy road to ride your bike down. And he was in like not even the cool part of Foster, but he got hit by a car. No, he was the Copper Penny. And I don't know what the hell he was doing in Lentz, this millionaire football all-star, but
everyone's got to slum it sometime, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, he sometimes you have to get kind of jarred by something to realize it how important it is to make sure everybody's got safe access to an enjoyable non-petrol powered way of getting around.
Right. Right. And
it's a little precise, but
well, and you know, he took something that sort of happened to him and made it somewhat positive. You know, getting helmets for kids, especially kids that can't afford to buy helmets.
Kids that bike down Foster by the new Copper Penny.
if you're living around Foster as we do, then you probably are having a hard time getting the money around for a helmet.
You'll see the strapping young millionaire passing out helmets by.
So, thanks, Joey. my future kids.
You have to kind of think about it that it's easier than actually tackling the real problem, which is Foster.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, he can, I think it's really positive that he turned that into something, but I mean, how many pedestrians and bicyclists got mowed down in the last year around Foster and on Foster?
Yeah.
It's
for being such a wide road that cuts through so many neighborhoods, you would think that it would be something we would have retrofitted for non-motorized ways of getting from A to B.
I'm really, really surprised that the banners that are so present at Foster are not doing what they're supposed to do.
The banners,
you know.
Oh, the welcome campaign, to Lentz.
Like, yeah. No, the campaign banners. It's like, you know, drive careful, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Look out. And I mean, when the real joke is when I crossed Foster, there's actually the traffic. I came over the 205 path to beautiful Lentz, and there's a traffic light. You push the bottom on the 205 path, and then it's like, careful, vehicles might not stop. Careful, vehicles might not stop.
Yeah. So
it's encouraging,
right? It sort of takes away the validity of the crossing in a way. It's like, we've marked this, but
no
the
promises.
Vehicles really, yeah.
People can be jerks.
Vehicles still may not care.
You're on your own out here, pal.
Next headline, and this will probably just be our last one, is Portland Community College starts a bike rental program, and the basic. One of this is the Associated Students of PCC, ASPCC, is starting a bike rental program for $15 a term. You can rent a bike and get access to the campus of PCC.
And you can keep it at your house and you can...
yeah.
So how it works, huh?
Do you get a helmet? It doesn't say. I would imagine you don't get a helmet, and unless the rack is put on the bike itself, which it's saying that Cyclone Bicycle Supply and Portland Design Works are outfitting. Oh no, with new accessories including fenders, bells, lights, locks, and helmets. So there you go.
$15 a term is not bad.
That's pretty awesome.
That's a really good deal. I know a few things about Portland Design Works and their accessories, and I think they make really good stuff.
They're really sweet guys.
Yeah.
They're really, like, they're very involved in the community. It's like whenever you need something for donations, those are the guys to go.
Cool.
Damn, I think I just spoiled my sauce. But they're very, very generous with donation for all kinds of good things that are going on in the community, and they're just really nice guys.
Sweet.
That's the kind of business I love talking about in Portland.
Yeah, that makes me happy to hear, because I just like their products. I don't know.
Sweet little velodrome. Did you ever see
that? Oh, no, I've never seen
it. They had a party, and they had like this sweet little velodrome that they set up, like a little wooden velodrome, and like all my mechanics flocked to it, and they had like races, and it was really awesome.
That's awesome. Well, and speaking of good local businesses, last one we can mention is St. Francis Plumbing has changed their name to Plumbing by Bike.
Let me get back there.
There he is.
I believe he's just called the Bicycle Plumber.
So he forsook his name patron?
Probably just to make it a little bit more direct that it's not just eco-friendly.
So St. Francis Plumbing is not, I mean, it doesn't say it's in and of itself. Name.
If you have a sort of Christian literacy, you might know that, St. Francis, patron of nature and birds and such. Mm-hmm. And then you might guess,
it's a plumber.
Yeah, he must use bamboo instead of pipes. This is a bit more direct. Probably is going to help him out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said he's been on the show?
Yeah. Once? Yeah. I do not remember which episode, but he's a wonderful fellow, Josh. Yeah.
Great.
So that ends the mailbag.
Yay, mailbag.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
Oh, great.
Congratulations. Yeah. So let's save the mailbag for later.
Sure.
And let's just get right into it. So tell us about Clever Cycles. Give us the intro.
So, Clever Cycles is owned by four people who happen to be actually two couples.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dean and Ray Mullen, and me and my husband Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And it all started about 5 years ago. In June, we have our fifth anniversary, we actually started around this time of the year. And it all happened actually in another kind of Portland institution, Jackie O'Thea's beautiful garden. It was an Easter party, and the Mullins rolled in with three kids on bikes. So that was like the most awesome thing. So Dean was riding on a tandem with his oldest son behind him. With a trailer bike.
Oh, that's awesome.
With second oldest son. And then his daughter, which at that point was a baby, she was in the trailer. What's not to love?
Yeah, yeah.
And by that time, my husband and I already had a small bike business called Clever Chimp. It was an electro-assist system for exercycled bikes. And we actually, two years before, we had moved up from San Francisco. My husband started Clever Chimp in San Francisco. And then, for economic reason, we moved up here. I was still in IT. We were running the business out of the basement. And so we were there with our exercycled bike with a Stoke Monkey on it. Mm-hmm. Stoke Monkey is the electro-assist system that my husband patented. Mm-hmm. So Dean was standing there staring at our bike, and we were staring at Dean's bike, and it was just like, ding! Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so 2 months later, Dean was in our basement putting stoke monkeys on all of his bikes. He bought 2 systems from us, which was a big deal at that time. really big deal. And over installing the stoke monkeys, he and Todd got to talk, and Dean talked about this really cool bike that he had seen that a Dutch woman imported to Portland. She lived in the Netherlands, and there's this cool bike, and his wife, did some research on it, and it's Buckfeet's. And wouldn't it be cool, and, you know, we could, and shouldn't we, and the basement, and we... So, 3 months later, we had a business plan written. 5 months later, I quit my rather nicely paying IT job. and then, in early January, I think January 15th was, we actually leased a spot. We leased our shop, and we worked out of the basement of where we are now at 908 Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. And we ordered a container of these Buckfeet's and a few big Dutch bikes. And actually, it was so funny because, you know, I got one pretty early. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Dean got one. So we were riding around. It was like crack cocaine. It's like people were like, where did you get this bike? Can I have one? So we were literally selling like the bikes out of garages on street corners.
That's exciting.
Because we didn't have a shop yet.
So in 2007, there's already quite a few bike shops in Portland, and you've got the sort of bike mod culture.
But it was not. See, the problem was, they were not for families.
Mm.
So where you had the big disconnect was, so you had like all these, and you know, more or less Dean and Ray and me and Todd, we were falling under that demographic. Todd used to do bike tours and everything. And then suddenly we had a kid, what to do? Mm. Same, you know, even multiple fold with Dean because he has 4 kids. So we were all like these cyclists who suddenly were banned to life on, well, we never had a car, but it was suddenly there was this disconnect. Like, what the hell do you do with a kid on a bike? And so we were starting to look around, and there were trailers out there. There were some American-made kid seats, mm-hmm. but it was not really, and we're actually still looking for it, but there was not really a complete solution.
Mm.
You know, and what do you do if you have the typical model of the American family,
right?
You know, one baby, and then 2 years later you have the next child. What do you do with 2 kids on a bike? One kid, you know, you can put a kid seat on it, but 2 kids?
Yeah.
What the hell? So we started importing the Buckfeet's. We did explore American-made solution, and we were talking to Commotion mm-hmm. in Eugene. But the idea was basically and Dean was really good at that, but profit and so on. You know, we were really needed like 25 bikes at a dot. And Commotion, they're really great, and they're this great community program. Mm. And I really believe in what they teach kids and their interns. But, you know, they build like perhaps 10, 15 bikes a year. And we basically needed 25 yeah. bikes, like, boom, so, there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, so we started out in the back of the building at 908. And with like just Buckfeet's and some Dutch city bikes from Walk Cycles. And then it basically took off from there. And so our philosophy behind that is that we sometimes stray, but we try to have products in the shop that we all agree upon, mm-hmm. that we all use, that, you know, have like our full approval. So we started out with the Dutch Oma and Opa's feeds from Work Cycle, mm-hmm. With the Buckfeet's. Then Todd took Dean on a trip to Amsterdam because Dean at that point, sure. also had never been out of the country. So Todd wanted to show him what Amsterdam feels like and where the bikes come from. Mm-hmm. And also to test ride different bike feeds, really find what would work best for us,
yes.
what would
yes.
work best for Portland. Because, for instance, in the Netherlands, everything is like three speeds or single speed because there are no hills. The only hills they have are the dikes.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So we basically had something in our mind that we needed. We needed eight speeds. We needed good brakes. We needed,
lights,
all weather. So we had basically our mm-hmm. idea set. And so Todd took Dean to Amsterdam. They made a stop in England. Dean utterly fell in love with Bromptons because, I mean, Todd and I, we have Bromptons since the 1998.
Oh, wow.
So and we really love them. So that's how basically our kind of palette evolved. So mm-hmm. we're not a brand dealer. It was never our idea to have, which is sometimes hard. So it was never like, oh, we have Specialized, we have Track, which was pretty unheard of before too, because a lot of companies are actually, mm-hmm. They have two or three brands and that's it. We were really going through, that's a bike we want, that's a bike mm-hmm, we want, mm-hmm. that's a bike we want. And our big yay or nay thing is, before we get a bike, does it take a kit seat? Can you get groceries on it? Mm-hmm. Can you get like a hub? Can you get a rack, fenders, lights on it? Mm. So we really try to sell really complete, what we call complete bikes.
Because the alternatives would be bicycles that are more calibrated for like a leisurely roadies, ride yeah. or for...
Yeah. And you know, so it's...
sports oriented
yeah,
or recreation oriented counting, yeah. versus...
Recreation and sports, and that's why we always stress it's utilitarian. We have utilitarian bikes.
Right on.
So if people come in, we basically know we don't have mountain bikes. Nope, we don't have road bikes. We have utilitarian bikes. Mm. And so that was like 5 years ago. And so basically we try to carry our philosophy through. We have kit seats that kind of fit on 90% of all the bikes. We have the only brand of saddles. We have our leather saddles because that's the most, we think it's the most healthiest for you. No spandex. wool. So basically the idea is you can... Again, very Dutch influence. You can like go on your bike, in your regular clothes with your regular shoes, so no clip-ons, and you can ride. And then on the way home from work, you pick up the groceries, or the kid, or both. Mm-hmm. And that is basically where it
it's
came from.
Bicycling for everybody.
Yep.
Yeah. What I've heard Jonathan Moss talk about these the different kinds of ways people in Portland relate to bicycling, and there's about 10% of us that are, we're going to do it no matter what. And then there's 35% maybe that are kind of like, there, no way in hell will I ever do it no matter what. But then there's this big 60% margin that is mm-hmm. interested, but concerned. And it mm-hmm. seems to me like, I think when I first started paying attention to your business and hearing your story, is you're catering to the 10%, but I realize that's really, no, you're trying to really make this for that other 60% that is interested, but mm-hmm. I need to have things that actually work for my station of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is, I mean, but it's really not that we are anti-car.
Yeah.
Cars have an absolute place in everybody's life. I mean, if I go out to IKEA or so on and, exactly. Schlep 250 pounds of stuff home with me, I do need a car. And Todd and I, we are Zipcar members, very happy. Can mm-hmm. I say that? Okay.
Yeah.
We're very happy with that. And
as long as they stop having mean advertisements about bicycles.
Yeah, but kind of, I think we pulled that tooth.
Yeah.
And they basically re-apped their offer with us that you get, if you get a Zipcar membership, 10% off of Brompton.
Hey, really? Off of Brompton?
Yep. Nice. So
that's good to know.
Yeah, that's cruel, no? But, you know, things like that. So cars have a place, and it's just that I think for trips under 3 miles, it's not a big deal. You know, you don't need a car. The big problem is also what I really see is there are a lot of women out there who basically, you know, who cycled through college, who did all these cool things by bike, and then they have the kids. And then their life, as they think or as they feel, becomes too hectic because there's, you know, soccer and... and, you know, shopping and here and there. It's all still short trips, but the thing with the kid really bugs them. And the idea to give them a feeling that they can transport not one but two kids safely on a bike is a really big thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is what also is a really big issue is the cost. Because, you know... a lot of women have, like, no problem.
There we go.
Thank you. A lot of... He just adjusted my mic. There we go. A lot of people...
With it, sorry.
A lot of people have, like... A lot of women have, like, no problem dropping $600 on a pair of boots. But $600 for a bike is a big deal. And so that's really... That has been... And then this entire, you know, going into bike shop, you know, trying to... explain to the guy in the bike shop that you have problem with the thingy merging at the end of the wheel. You know, I really
this
don't
whole
know.
Other pile of
yeah, I, you know, and there's like basically there's like and there's this entire issue. Just it's like with a car dealership, you know, to be comfortable to go into a bike shop and say, okay, this is what I need. I don't know exactly what that means, but this is what I need to fulfill. And
so it's just bringing people into a literacy of that without having to convert them into the culture.
Just making them comfortable. Making women comfortable. And I think we're kind of doing okay with that. Although some brewers may believe you differently, but I think we're doing okay because on average we sell 60 to 70% more step-proof frames than actually diamond frames, which are normally kept, you know. So, yeah, a lot of women coming in.
Yeah.
I think, and you sort of touched on this earlier, I think one of the intimidating factors of people making bikes sort of a daily thing as opposed to a recreational thing is, well, like you were saying, there's a literacy involved. Like, if you're riding your bike every day, especially, you know, in the weather that we get occasionally here, you're going to need to get it repaired, and you take it to the bike shop. If you don't know what you're talking about, there's always that fear.
They look over their glasses at you.
And I love city bikes, but I'm going to pick on them because they're kind of easy to pick on. And city bikes, I love you guys, but, you know, they have this sort of uptight. And if you're just looking at, like, the surface and you're not, like, getting to know people, you know, you can kind of go like, oh, these are a bunch of hipsters, fixie types, and I'm going to bring my bike in and ask them for stuff. And, yeah, they're going to look over their safety goggles at me and be like, you don't belong here, which isn't necessarily true, but that's sort of the intimidating factor.
Yeah.
And another thing you had mentioned was the idea of, you know, being able to bike in your regular clothes, doing regular things with your bike. And that's, I think, another thing that bike culture or certain bike cultures, a subculture within a subculture can perpetuate is this sort of spandex clad, you know, shave the ounces off your bike, you know, get as little weight as possible so you can go as fast as possible for as long as possible.
Which has something going for it, but it just becomes this completely distracting other culture that is not for...
But it's not utilitarian. It's not utilitarian, and it can be sport, and it can be intimidating for the average person to want to get into cycling. You know, I think one of the main things I hear from people who, you know, are sort of on the fence is, well, yeah, I would really like to get myself a bike, but I really don't know anything about them, and I don't want to like have to get a whole new wardrobe for it. And, you know, it's really hard to kind of like break through those stereotypes of like, you don't have to like strip down to spandex and you don't have to have like the carbon frame, you know?
Yeah.
And you can go get your groceries with, you know, just the cruddy bike that you have or, you know, a nice utilitarian bike.
And I think as a counterpoint to what you just said, I would say, like, I mean, who hadn't had a bike as a kid? And can you remember how cool that was? Yeah. It was like your pirate ship, your rocket, your trusty steed riding over the prairies. Mm-hmm. And I had that. And, you know, I really fondly remember the summer evenings where I disappeared after dinner till like 9 o'clock into the park. You know, it was something like the Springwater Corridor here. So I just disappeared like for 2 hours with a bunch of kids. And we rode around till we kind of, you know, till our tongues dropped to the floor because we couldn't anymore and like dragged ourselves home. And it was so awesome. Or, you know, when I got older, like 16, 17, like going clubbing on my bike. And the bike was really, for me, that was like this tremendous freedom because, you know, driver's license age in Germany is 18. But it was like, it made me feel safer to actually go by bike than, for instance, using the bus or public transportation because I felt like I was in control of my environment. Oh. So I was not exposed to the guy in the back bench. He was like creeping closer to me. You know, I could control where I was going. And, you know,
you didn't have to worry about missing the next bus, the last bus.
Yeah. Or like, you know, being like a sitting target there for an hour waiting for the next bus. If you miss the bus, you know, you're not a sitting target. You were in charge. And in my mind, it was still a bigger thing for, you know, a perf stepping in front of a really fast going bike than, you know, trying to grope me in the bus. Mm-hmm. So I felt really safer.
Right on.
On the bike, and basically my story is that I did at one point with 18 as a form of passage, I did make a driver's license in Germany, but I never had a car. I moved to Frankfurt where I met my husband. But Frankfurt, big town, no parking spot. It was, you know, beside the parking spot apartments there, I mean, that was like the really hard thing to get, you know. So there was just no question that I could afford a car or had a parking spot. So bike. And then we moved to New York at one point.
Trouble parking in Frankfurt.
And basically, so my husband and I, we never saw the necessity of getting a car. And we had like an old Mazda truck for 6 months because he was out in Santa Fe, and he had at one point moved back into to the West Coast to the East Coast, but that was it. That's why we had a truck. And we kind of calculated at one point that by not having a car, it saved us, you know, counting up to our age now, it saved us about $125,000.
Wow. Nice.
Oh, man. Yeah, so when you look at that $600 for a bike,
it's really silly if you're used to just getting the thing from
Target.
But see, the idea is like it's on top. And if you really do a spreadsheet, if you really sit down and you do a spreadsheet,
oh yeah,
you know, and you don't pay taxes on it, you don't pay gas, and gym membership, don't need it anymore.
Right. That's one of my most common talking points with people in explaining bicycling is like, do you go to the gym? Like, do you drive 7 miles to the gym each way so that you can ride an exercise bike 14 miles?
Mm-hmm.
Save $40 a damn month. Just ride your fucking bike.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I think, and that is like what I really want to drive home also for women. I mean, I battled with depression for a long time, and bicycling, like regular physical activity, is really one of the really good natural remedies against depression. So if you bicycle, and if you bicycle outside, not in the gym, you get the vitamin D, you get the fresh air, you get meditation time.
You feel more connected to your cities. You're letting out endorphins.
Yeah, and it's really fantastic.
You're
and
not so, comparing yourself to people.
Well, and it's just for me, it's like, you know, when you come home, when I really feel stressed out and, you know, I hit the pedal on my way home and I'm already much calmer when I arrive home. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for me, I think it's really life. It's not life changing because I did it more or less all my life, but it's just something I would never want to give up. And I have no problems. There's a very cute calendar hanging across from me here with a girl on a diamond frame with a rather short skirt. But, you know,
From the Bell Stars in Fort Collins. They're a girls bicycle gang.
Oh,
yes.
Goody. She looks really, really cute and has very adorable great. Heels on and a cute little dress and a diamond frame. Well, you know.
And it's a safety tip. Stop in the name of love, and she stopped at a stop sign.
Oh, okay.
You see what, yeah. That's, so now that's now the whole gimmick. There's one that says use protection, and she's putting a helmet on.
Oh. Yeah.
Aha.
No, but I have no problem riding in skirts either or, you know, put heels on.
And I love putting a skirt on. It's great.
Yeah.
It's good ventilation.
This is Portland. That's not necessarily a joke, I guess.
I bet Brent has really good legs. Yeah, that's
Count ounces.
No, but so yeah, one of the things is again like utility, women on bikes and kids on bikes, and also I think what one of my big goals is when you bike with your kid, it becomes kind of this lifestyle decision for them too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you put my son when he was small and when you put him in a car, he was like, "Open the windows, I can't breathe." Because he felt stuffy in the car. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he has been on a bike since he was like 4 or 5 weeks old. I started with the trailer and then progressed to a front seat and then to a back seat. Mm-hmm. You know, rides his own bike. And yeah, you can do it, but... Oh, God, did I just say but? One of the problems I sometimes...
And?
No, one of the problems I sometimes have with women, you know, we're really... A lot of women are really super moms. You know, they have, like, all this stuff. They have, like, 3 kids. They weigh 135 pounds, and they think they can haul 3 kids and the groceries on the bike... And make it in 25 minutes up the hill. And so at one point you have to be realistic, you know. Yeah. At one point it's like, yeah, or when you know, a mom of 4 kids says, you know, I really feel bad. I really want to use a bike, but, you know, I have most of the 4 kids all the time with me. It's like, okay, that's where God, you know, invented the car for.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and by the way, I live in Utah. And, you know, at one point you have to say, hey, it makes sense to have a car. But if you just have two of the kids with you, perhaps, or if you want to do something for yourself, just get yourself a bike.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to be realistic. And there has to be a good balance, and you have to be realistic. It hurts to say. Not every problem can be solved by a bike, but definitely try.
Many of them can, though.
Yeah,
many
they all of them roll can, into yeah. it. So I'm curious for your take on. So there's sort of 3 components to getting more people excited about bicycles as a lifestyle choice. It seems to be like just the products and feeling being able to pick something out without being intimidated by that process. There's the infrastructure, and then there's the culture, which sort of, I guess, encompasses all of it. Is like, can I feel like I'm part of this? You know what I mean? Like the I'm not just in the spandex.
Are you
are you
commenting on my non-existence tattoos and my non-existent piercings?
Yeah, it's bigger than just a scene.
Yeah,
and I guess I'm curious on any of those levels of like both product availability. Like, I'm curious what's Are there any missing spots in terms of like things like bike accessories or certain life stage things like
That, oh, Jesus, did you ever come to the right person?
Yeah, I that's why I love bicycling, but I don't pay really close attention to all the different brands and new products that are coming out. But I'm really excited when I hear about it. So I figured you might be able to tell us what's something great that just came out, or what is, are you hoping?
I'll just start about this. Okay. So being a woman, I still feel that there is a big gap in like really good products for women. Mm-hmm. I very often have the feeling that women are kind of an afterthought. Mm-hmm. A lot of the bikes, either they have really good components and they're butt ugly, or they're very, very pretty and absolutely utterly non-functional. So I think we need to really strike there a better, again, the word balance. I do start to see improvement. I really do start to see improvement. And I think, and I just can encourage people, aka the bike industry, to really tap into that, because women are a huge market and they also control a lot of the income.
Yeah.
So really hit the women, boys, and get some nice bikes out there. The other thing is, you know, the helmet discussion with the raging helmet discussion. And one of the problems, what keeps a lot of women from bicycling is really the damn thing with the helmet. Mm-hmm. Because there isn't a helmet out there yet that, for instance, fits well on overlong hair. Because long hair makes whatever you have, the padding material, it will ride up.
Yeah.
So it's really, really hard to fit a helmet well with a woman with a lot of hair. And I don't, you know, don't even let me get into braids and weaves. It's really, really hard. And I just want to say, if I would put down every month $250 to have like good braids put in, or have a nice weave in my hair, I would not put a helmet on it.
No way.
You know?
No.
And so that's one of the problems. Another problem is, and I really have to applaud one of our Portland firms that really stepped up to it now, is that the average size of an American woman is size 14. So a lot of the rain jackets do not fit at all. Oh, wow. A lot of the rain pants do not fit. For men, I mean, it's now kind of accepted that there are, you know, guys with bellies out there. And so you start to see not that much, but you start to see XXL rain jackets and XXL rain pants. But for women, it was really, really impossible to get everything. You know, XL was a rarity. And then the idiocy behind it was that an XL, which is normally in close sizing, size 14 to 16, it was actually a size 12, you know. It was a size 12. So basically the idea was only skinny women cycle, right. You know. And so, again, thankfully, Showers Pass really stepped up and they redesigned their rain pants. And it's really now true to fit. Where you really, when you buy an XL of that rain pant, you really know it's a 12 to 14 as it should be, you know. And the XXL, they actually came out with an XXL rain pants. Glory! it's really a 16 to 18. So it's really
it's
there.
It's being more honest.
It's more honest. And so, you know, and I can just encourage them to do the same to the rain jackets. Because, you know, after... Title 9. With Title 9, we have a lot of really beautiful, strong women off there who grew up like swimming and playing soccer and doing track. So it's not your regular fit anymore. And it has been, it's already hard if you have to address that in fashion, but also addressing that in sports. You really, in sports outfits and rain jackets and so on, utilitarian clothing, you really have to do that. So it's really, you need to come to that point.
Well, and that's it. There's an interesting point in there, and that's sort of how we as Americans perceive you know, what is in shape or what is not in shape. Like, someone can be physically in shape. A woman can be physically in shape and not necessarily, like, you know, size two or size six or whatever. You know,
they can be a size 14
and still be, like, physically in shape and probably kick my ass. Yeah. But, you know.
And it's nearly, I don't want to say it's the other, it's totally the other way around, but if you're a regular size 8 and you start to do sports, you pretty quickly size 10 and size 12, not because
you're building muscle,
but because you're building muscle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The point is, like, a size 14 is not necessarily, like, fat and slovenly. A size 14 means, like, you know,
you come to the Hefford ride.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, there's the, you know, during Paddlepalooza, we have the Heifer Ride,
right.
And there are women there who, you know, kick my butt up and down the particular.
One thing that was mentioned in last episode and sort of touched on in what you were saying too, was the guy whose name I cannot recall. He had mentioned how in his bike shop, they were designing, like, from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
For his line of women's cycles, he hired women designers only.
Who did you talk to?
It's some dude in Boston whose name is Dan Sorger in Boston. Anyways, and he had mentioned that there's sort of this lack of bikes and bike designers that are, like, you know, by women and for women.
Mm. It doesn't need to be, I mean, I don't want to be sexist. It doesn't need to be by women. It just needs to be for women.
Right.
And I, for instance, have this idea. I come from human-computer interaction. So I did, like, websites and usability testing and all that in a previous lifetime. And I'm really, like, I want to seriously sit down with some bike companies and say, okay, let's construct a straw customer. This is, like, the customer I see in my shop. And then do, like, 3 or 4 women, you know, a composite of my different female customers, and say, these are, like, the groups you need to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not... You know, and because I really think that a lot of the, I'm really baffled that you can spend a lot of money on, like, detailed research for your road user, for your roadie, for your road bike riders, you know, down to a millimeter, and you have to, you know, the saddle has to be that height, and the seat tube has to be on this angle, and then the top tube has to be this length. And totally ignore women. And again, it's such an untapped market, and it really baffles me. And it doesn't have to be pink. It doesn't have to be
white. You don't have to put flowers on the side of it.
No flowers, because there are a lot of, like, tremendously strong women out there who, you know, who really come and say, okay, you know I can't do that on a road bike, but I still want to be fast. You know, I don't want to be, mm-hmm. I don't want to have a huffy, you know. But we need to hit these points, and they're very articulate about it. And it's just really hard to find something that is also, you know, pleasing to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, there are, you know, there are firms which I love dearly, but you really have to say, okay, you have the free choice between a very beautiful bike, or you can have the but ugly bike that has the great features, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hint, firm. No, but yeah. So I was mentioning that I was at the Portland NAPS preview, and I don't know if I can do this here, but there was this young man from Signal Bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, typical. There were your diamond frames, really beautifully built diamond frames, but, you know, been there, done that.
Yeah.
There were your, you know, snow-tired bikes. There was the really beautiful cargo bike from Metrofeet. There was a great bike with a trailer there. And then there was the Signal bike. It was a mixtie with an 11-speed Alfine, with lights integrated. But it was just a really beautiful woman's bike. And I was just like, why? I mean, I see, again, I see the movement towards it, but why can't I have that in my shop for like a few thousand dollars less? I mean, I wanted that bike. And I think, for instance, Linus is really doing a great job getting there. They have mixties for like more sportive women. They have the upright duchies, and everything under $1,000 is a great deal. But I really, you know, I really, my ideal, what I really would love to see, and I think we're partially there, is a bike that, you know, a woman gets when she has her first kid, and she can put a kid seat on the back or on the front, and she can ride that until kid number two comes ahead. With kid number two, we can slap an extra cycle on the back, and then mom has not only place for little person number one, but little, you know, little person number two can get in the same baby seat that number one used in the front. And then if both are the right age, they can move on the back on the exercycle. And mom has enough space to have the groceries, the diaper bag, and, you know, whatever it needs. And then basically, and she's still, the bike is still fun enough to ride, A, that she can do it, that she gets it up the hills, that she can commute on it. And then, you know, finally kind of phasing out of it. You know, take one kid seat off when the oldest kid learns to ride, or, you know, have kid number three. But basically have like this long-term solution for a mom. And I have a specific bike in mind again, but it's a great bike, but the entire outside, the appeal is not pleasing enough that it really hits all the, that really rocks all the women's world.
Do you feel that if they knew those products were around, like down the road, like, okay, when the kid hits three, I can, this is available to me.
Well, that's how I tried to sell the bikes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really tried to, when a woman comes into my shop, I really try to give her an overview that she has option. So yes, you can go with the buck feet. That makes sense if you plan to have multiple kids, if you start when the first kid is on the way, because over 5 years, you know, the $3,000 that you plunk down is a really good investment because you have the bike, you have the space, you can put all the diaper bags in there, you can grocery shopping. You have your kids dry. Mm-hmm. You can start with putting the baby seat in there.
And $3,000 seems like a lot for a bike, but you compare that to a clunker car you'd get for $3,000, and all the maintenance and all the gas, you know, and all the insurance.
I always felt bad, but then I heard that people, you know, spend on carbon frames, they spend like $5,000.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
They're easy. $5,000.
Nutters! Yeah. No, but so I what I want to really move to is like this kind of multi-year plan that people have a transportation plan, you know, and you can do that. There's this one bike that I really like that where you can do it. And I really do like exercycles because I think they're a great option. I like long tail bikes for people who don't have as much space to, for instance, you know, park buck feet, which is, it's a big deal. That's a great option, you know. But I still think that there's still a lot of room for growth. But over the last 5 years, I am so, so utterly pleased to see where we already have gotten up to. Because, I mean, Surly has the big dummy. There's the Kona Ute. There's the Ubamundo.
They're realizing there's this whole other market.
Yeah,
that
there's
they
this
aren't...
entire other market, you know, and there are two other cargo and family bike shops in the town now. There is one firm that supports himself, you know, Metrofeeds, who actually custom builds them. There is Setma in Eugene. So there's really a market for all that. Yep. And now the big next thing is also, you know, like you said, St. Francis, the bike plumber, and Soup Cycles, and there is our the guide with the tamales, you know, and just
there's even a doctor out there, family doctor,
yeah, you know, the chiropractor, and I just want to see that grow, and I'm very, very happy to see that all going on, and see that all develop. So I think that's at one point, I was just seeing myself as a person who just happened not to have a car, not even like a bicyclist per se. But at one point, I actually accepted it and says, okay, perhaps I am a bike advocate. Mm-hmm. And I really had problems with that because it wasn't something I actively advocated for. It was just something I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to have extra credit for it or whatever.
Right.
And that was actually also big moments for me to join the PTA and be on the, mm-hmm. on the board of the BTA. And because for me, that's just an extension. You know, if you get upset enough about people rushing through your neighborhood with 45 miles an hour in a 25-mile school zone, you get a little bit miffed.
Yeah.
Or if you mm-hmm. hear that, if you hear that women get honked at when they go up Belmont with a kid on their back because Belmont is such a busy street and we're just concerned for your safety.
Right.
Well, there is something in your car called a brake pedal. If you feel unsafe around those people, just use it.
Yeah.
The horn. Yeah.
Not the horn.
That's a great point.
But things like that. And so I finally accepted it and says, okay, perhaps it's time to do something about it.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on and
hey.
Sharing about this stuff. Let's hit our single mail.
Our bag
is overflowing. It overfloweth. And I don't have the
you've got mail.
There we go.
Penny.
You want to read it?
Yeah, sure. So we got this email from this guy named Chris, and it's in response to episode 65, which was the aforementioned Dan Sorger episode. And he just writes, Dear Sprocket Podcast crew, fantastic podcast. Awesome. What an educational interview. I sat glued to my speakers, listening intently through the entire interview, only to hear Brock abruptly cut it off just before he takes Dan's bike for a ride. How could you? And then to hear Brock say that the rest of the interview would be carried on some undetermined time in the future. Oh, that hurt my heart.
Aww.
I would love to hear the rest of the broadcast and hope that you guys post it soon. Keep up the great work, Chris. Cool. Well, thanks, Chris. I'm glad you enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
I enjoyed listening to it myself.
Word. All right, well, I think it's that time of the show where we wrap it up.
Upcoming shows.
Oh, shoot, yeah, let's do that.
So, upcoming shows. Dr. Jeff, at last, it says.
On what day is that?
That is the 4th, and then...
Vincent Caldoni is on the 11th.
Vincent Caldoni, I cannot wait to hear
what he's good people, man.
Has to come with.
Yeah.
And 318, the 18th, Matt.
Piccio,
thank you.
He'll be back.
Talks about peak oil.
Piccio, yeah!
Yeah, well, so, he and I will be talking peak oil. It's going to be a good time.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Ask him about adventure cycles. He is like the guy for short camp trips.
Oh, we had him on the show just about a month ago and realized we both are into peak oil stuff, so we decided we would have another. Obsessed. All right.
Email us at the Sprocket Podcast. Oh, no, you've got that.
This all happens.
Oh,
with the music, see?
Sorry.
Music. Oh, no, you didn't turn the volume up.
I didn't turn the volume up.
This is the amateur. I love this. This is fun.
It's amateur hour.
No. Brock is going to be like listening in, like Papa listening into the kids playing with... Yeah, so...
So I've got the volume up now.
There we go.
Oh, there we go.
See, there it is. All right, well... Oh, too loud! Too loud! There we go. thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to us. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback to us about the program, suggestions for topics or guests or drinks or whatever, via email, thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our intro-outro, and Hurtbird for our headline stuff. I'm Brandon.
I'm Aaron.
And this has been The Sprocket Podcast.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening.